In today's state capitol report, we'll discuss a scathing transportation audit, legislative maps, Lincoln Hills, and more. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We're going to start with this transportation audit, which said that the Department of Transportation underestimated the costs of 16 ongoing major highway projects. Our first guest says that even if the State Department of Transportation fully realized the potential savings that were laid out in this audit, it would not come close to solving Wisconsin's billion-dollar transportation funding shortfall. We will talk about what we do about the state of our roads and funding our transportation needs with our first guest, and we'll welcome your thoughts and reactions, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So we wonder what your reaction is to the findings of this DOT audit and the underestimating of highway project costs. Craig Thompson is our first guest. He is the executive director of the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So what was your read of this DOT audit, which one headline called scathing and showed significant cost overruns of projects and a deterioration of state roadways?
Well, I think, you know, the word scathing has been repeated quite a bit. I think the audit, which we supported having done, by the way, and glad that they did it, did point out some best practices that could be improved upon in some different areas. And it did show that for the major highway projects, the cost that was given at time of enumeration did end up being quite a bit different than the final cost or where we're at even right now in some of those projects. I think it's a little bit different than a cost overrun. But the numbers are big, and it points out that the DOT did not include, although it pointed out in almost all of these that it was not including inflation, but it did not include the projections of inflation for the Transportation Projects Commission and the legislature.
So it's not as though they had faulty estimates. They didn't account for inflation.
Right. And there was some other elements as well. And one of the things I think the audit pointed out is as these projects go on, the initial estimate at the point of enumeration, they don't keep that number. They just keep revising it. And it's one of the things the audit pointed out, which I think is a very good point, is that they should have down what the initial estimate was at the point of enumeration.
So they looked at some past projects, and they also looked at these 16 ongoing projects, and the 16 ongoing major highway projects have increased in cost by about $3 billion since they were approved by the state legislature. That is a lot of money.
Oh, it certainly is. And when you look at these projects, you're talking a lot of money. They first looked at 19 projects from 2006 on that were completed, and they did note that the projects took 18 years or more to complete. So you are going to be looking at the cost changing pretty significantly over that period of time. But I think what's pointed out and I think is legitimate is both the legislature and the public and everybody, we should have a pretty good idea of what that means over time. It's not going to be 100% accurate. That part I think people should understand is that whether you're looking at construction inflation or CPI in general, CPI is a little more known. But I think at least it would be a much better guess and give you a much better idea of what these will cost over time. And also, when we defer and delay these projects, how much it's going to cost us to do that.
Well, the audit also says that the condition of our roads have gone downhill. Give us an idea of the scope of what it says about the state of our roads.
Yeah, this part, I think, really should grab people's attention. It's really pretty staggering. If you look at the DOT uses its own method for judging, which is a little bit different than the national method where you can compare states. But if you take the state's own method that it uses, Our roads that were in good shape went from 53% in 2010 to 41% in 2015, and the roads that were poor went from 7% up to 17%. But if you look at the International Roughness Index, which is what the feds use and every other state uses that you can compare, you notice that the difference is striking with our neighbors. I mean, Indiana has 75% of the roads in good shape, Ohio 75%, Michigan 73%, Illinois 66%, Minnesota 64%, and Iowa 55%. Wisconsin is 32% of our highways are in good condition. I mean, it's so much worse than our neighbors in the Midwest, it's not even close.
So what do you think, what is this audit going to do about that?
Well, some of that is on the legislative side and is on the funding side. But I think there is best practices, again, and there's some very good recommendations in here. You know, one of the things, we were hoping that we would find some recommendations for, a few more recommendations for cost savings in particular. But one of the things that they pointed out that I think the DOT could do a better job of is when they're going through the process of studying these projects, they ask for public input. And the DOT did that in all of these instances. But it didn't look like they necessarily took into consideration the public input to the level that they should have. They went through the process of gathering the public input. But, for example, Highway 38 in Racine, there was significant public distrust or not wanting to do that particular project at the time, but it still went forward and got enumerated. And eventually, the DOT recommended to the Transportation Projects Commission to remove it because of lack of public support, and they did. But that was after we had already spent $2 million. So I think on the front end, I think it's a legitimate point that we should be taking the public's opinion when we hold these hearings into account more than perhaps we have.
So did anything else jump out at you about this audit that has you concerned or scratching your head?
Well, I think just flat out the condition of our highways being so much worse than our neighbors, and not just our neighbors, but the national average is about 64% in good condition. Again, we're at 32%. So I think when you look at that, the answer is, it has to be, what are we going to do about this? It's been a steady decline for a decade. And if there is some things that we need to be doing a better job of as far as best practices at the department, and I think it pointed out they were doing some things very well, by the way, then we should do them. But at the end of the day, to say that we're going to, because of this audit, we're just going to sit on our hands and continue to do nothing again, seems to me that would be very, very foolish.
But those who are saying, well, wait a minute, you know, there's $3 billion here that was misbudgeted or we didn't account for, and if we did a better job at keeping an eye on these highway projects, we wouldn't have the deficit that we have.
Well, again, one of the specific recommendations that the Audit Bureau made was that it said that the legislature could consider modifying the statutes to require the DOT to include in the semiannual reports the cost estimates DOT provided at the time of enumeration, and to regularly update those. I think that's an excellent idea. I think we should do that moving forward. I don't know that if they would have done that at the time, that it would have changed the position we're in right now, but it would have given us a better, clearer picture of where we're at. And I think moving forward, we absolutely should do that. But that doesn't, again, I wouldn't call that mismanagement or cost overruns. It is, they said at the time they were not providing inflation. I think, you know, to the folks whether that they're submitting it to, you had to have some idea. I mean, now, they should be the ones, the experts, that are providing you a more clear idea. And I think we should have all that for moving forward. But that's not going to solve the situation.
So Governor Walker is expected to unveil his proposed two-year budget for the state in a little more than maybe a week and a half or so. How do you think this audit might affect what he wants to do about funding our transportation needs?
Well, I would hope it would have the effect of having the administration look at just how significant the issue is before us. There's been a lot of talk for the last decade, really in both parties equally, I think, that there's been an understanding that we've been kicking the can down the road and it's been getting worse and worse by pretty much just relying on bonding. We, as the two user fees we pay in our gas tax and our registration fee, we pay much less than our neighbors in all the other states that I just talked about that have much better roads than we do. So I'm hoping he takes that into consideration. The budget that he's been talking about and had the DOT submit to him would actually not only you know, the last five budgets have probably kicked the can down the road. This one would actually reduce the state highway program by about $450 million, which would be, in contrast to those, it not only would kick the can down the road, but it would move us backwards significantly.
We are talking with Craig Thompson, Executive Director of the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. We'll take your questions for him about funding our transportation needs and this new audit that was released last week of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. And again, welcoming your questions and thoughts on this at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network. This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking transportation during this segment of our State Capitol Report in the aftermath of a critical State Department of Transportation audit. What are we going to do about funding our roads? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Craig Thompson is our guest. He is the Executive Director of the Transportation Development Association. And our first caller is Tom in Burlington. Hi, Tom.
It's my understanding that Governor Walker gave $500 million back to the taxpayers before his election, and we're paying $161 million in interest on that. I know people in Burlington got $300 and $400 checks. My question is, why is the, and it comes out of the general fund, has to pay for that.
You're saying you got a rebate check, Tom?
Everybody in Burlington before the election, people got checks in the mail, $300 and $400. He gave $500 million out, and we're paying. It was an article in the Milwaukee Journal.
Yeah, I'm not sure quite accurate. But anyway, what's the point with transportation?
The thing is, the general fund is one thing, and then the transportation fund is another. Is there a general fund, or there's a separate fund or something or other, and how do they do that? Could you please explain that?
Yeah, and Craig, tell us, what is the state of the transportation fund right now for the state of Wisconsin, and why isn't it just a part of the general fund? Why is it separate?
Sure. Well, in Wisconsin and really nationally, we've really since the 50s had this idea that we would fund our transportation system through a user fee-based concept, and that it would be different, separate from the general fund. So when we pay our income taxes and when we pay sales tax, those go into the general fund to support a lot of the different government services that we all use. For transportation, the idea is the gasoline tax that we pay is generally a user fee. The more you drive, the more you fill up your car. And the registration fees that we pay when we pay $75 to get the sticker for our license plate and when we renew our driver's license. Those are all sort of user fees. And the concept was it'd be a user fee-based system, and that would fund transportation. So the revenue from those go into a separate fund, which actually now after there was a constitutional amendment that the voters approved in 2014 by an 80% vote. So now the monies that go into that fund constitutionally have to be spent on transportation.
Yeah, but that transportation fund is at a $1 trillion deficit?
A billion.
A billion dollars.
It's the Legislative Fiscal Bureau did a paper for the co-chair of finance, John Nygren, and they said it's about a $980 or $990 million annual shortfall.
I'm sorry. A billion dollar deficit, and part of that is still people will say this is because way back in the Doyle administration, Governor Doyle took $750 million from transportation and gave it to education when that was still allowable.
Over the course of a couple budgets, there was about $1.2 billion that was sort of transferred from the transportation fund to the general fund. A lot of that was replaced with bonding, but the portion that was not replaced with bonding has been repaid now. So I don't think you can the deficit in the transportation fund, you can't really point back and say it's to that. I think more it is the fact that We've reached a point in time where the interstates have to be rebuilt because they were built in the 50s and 60s and need to be rebuilt. And you couple that with these user fees are user fees, but they don't act like the other taxes do. So once we get rid of indexing, for the last decade, the money that comes in from the gas tax has been flat, basically. So while the general fund has some natural growth, you don't get that from transportation. So when you couple those together, it sort of makes you arrive at where we're at.
So we need to. Your point too is that we can't just keep bonding to cover our needs. We need to do. We need to raise these user fees. Is your position?
Well, yes, it is. Mm-hmm. And you know, bonding for long term capital projects, I think, can be a very prudent way to do it. But when you substitute bonding for funding, is when you get into trouble. You have to have a ratio of your income to how much you're bonding. And we've gotten way out of whack in the last 10 years, to the point that now the money we are bringing in, even though it hasn't gone up in 10 years, almost a quarter of every dollar we bring in now has to go pay for debt service. So that just compounds the problem even further.
We're going to be talking with State Representative Peter Barka, the minority leader in the State Assembly, in our next hour about this issue and others. But he was likening our transportation budget situation that we are approaching a crisis. Is this a crisis?
That term can be overused a lot, but it's a very serious situation right now. Our economy is the second most transportation dependent in the country, and our transportation system is one of the worst in the country.
Let's take another call. We'll go to Patrick in Richland Center. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, good morning for taking my call. The Republicans have been down there for 6 years, and they uncovered transportation cost overruns. Boy, they are savvy. Hey, what about, in the name of public safety, can't we just request to have the speed limit dropped a lot on these roads that are so shabby out here? It could be a boon to the transport or tourism department, saying our roads, you know, the 40-mile-an-hour speed limit on state roads, you can enjoy our scenery a lot more.
So are you serious about thinking dropping the speed limit will make a difference, Patrick?
The roads out here are so bad. Seriously, in the interest of public safety, you can only go 40 anyway.
What about that? He thinks that the roads are so bad you shouldn't go more than 40. But any thoughts on the speed limit and the state of our roads?
Well, I think some of the, you know, we talked about the overall position compared to other states. But what the audit also shows is we did try to pay more attention to the backbone during these last 10 years, which makes some sense when you're going to prioritize. But the non-backbone roads are even in worse shape than we talked about, and I think that's a little bit of what the caller's talking about.
And what is the backbone versus?
Well, the backbone are some of the more heavily traveled state mm-hmm. highways that the DOT has designated as, you know, sort of the most important backbone arteries of, and those still deteriorated some, but not nearly as much as the non-backbone, according to the audit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we had a number of callers who were just saying this road in my community is, or this highway is terrible. Everybody, I mean, and this audit says that our roads are among the worst in the country.
It does. And so to me, the question we have to have for our elected people is if there's things they feel they need to clean up, as best practices, that's great. But the question's got to be, what are we going to do about this and how is it going to get better?
Annie in Watertown. Hi, Annie.
Hi, our roads used to be much better than surrounding states. I remember, we had paved roads all over where other states didn't. I worked with a road construction, interstate road construction company in the 70s, and 80s, early 80s, but this doesn't happen overnight, such kind of, erosion of our system. And Lee Dreyfus made some cuts to the transportation budget. And, I didn't think anything of it, but the owner of the company, I just remember him saying that things are going to start going downhill, and it'll take a decade, he said, but you're going to notice how things go downhill.
A reaction to that, Craig Thompson?
Well, I think this audit does point out that it has been a steady deterioration over the last decade. And I think, a lot of people looked at during the late 1980s under Governor Thompson, our roads had gotten in pretty good shape, but since that period of time, I think they've been in pretty steady decline.
All right. Well, we have just a minute or less with you, Craig Thompson, before we welcome in our next guest. Your takeaway from this audit and your advice to the state legislature, which is going to be dealing with Governor Walker's budget.
Well, I think it just points out again that we've got serious issues that need to be confronted. Our neighbors in Michigan confronted it and passed a package. Our neighbors in Iowa did. Our neighbors in Indiana are considering one right now, and they already have much better roads than we do. So I think we need to look at efficiencies. We need to look at best practices. We need to look at revenues. We need to look at all of it. But in the end, I think our elected people have to have a plan for how is this going to get better.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Joy.
Craig Thompson is the Executive Director of the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. And now we will welcome in our next guest. Peter Barca is a Democratic State Representative from the Kenosha and Racine areas and is the Assembly Minority Leader. We will talk with him some about this DOT audit and what it means for the state's transportation system and what we should do to fund the state's transportation needs and some other issues facing the state of Wisconsin. And we welcome your questions and reactions for him as well at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And State Representative Peter Barca joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good to be on your show again.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. In response to the audit of the Department of Transportation, you said that Wisconsin is in a crisis state. What do you mean by that?
Well, we have gone for 6 years under Governor Scott Walker, where he's essentially put the entire transportation budget on a credit card. And as a consequence, we're seeing the impact where our roads are a third or fourth worst in the country, depending on how you measure it. And we're a very transportation-dependent economy. And in fact, the other thing that's ironic is that where we've seen a lot of gains down in the Racine and Kenosha area has been distribution companies that are moving in. And they're extremely transportation-dependent. So our economy, which is so important to have quality roads in order to get goods to and services to market, is really being hurt dramatically by this complete inaction on transportation issues over the course of the last 6 years. And in fact, it's so ironic because I'll never forget Governor Walker's first state of the state where he said we were done kicking the can down the road. But instead, we're kicking a much bigger can down a much longer road. And the strand of this audit that came out is just devastating.
Yeah. And talk about why it's devastating. What is so devastating about the audit?
Well, because, you know, it really hurts dramatically in so many ways. First of all, obviously, taxpayers, according to the auditors, have been given an improper information about the true cost of projects. So it's even worse than we thought because they weren't factoring in inflation. So a very bad picture that we thought we had has become much worse because they haven't taken into the impact of inflation. Secondly, the auditors pointed out how we're being hurt dramatically by all of these delays in projects because the interest is continuing to accumulate. So, you know, we're paying, you know, interest on our debt, meaning that every time the taxpayers pay for gas taxes, 20 cents of every dollar, instead of going to fixing roads, is going to just pay interest. And at the end of this budget, potentially be up to 25 cents. And so we just keep digging a much deeper hole, and it's really hurting taxpayers dramatically. And obviously, the Governor Walker's transportation department has really done a tremendous disservice to the taxpayers by not accurately predicting what costs would be. So the picture is far more bleak than we even thought.
And then as for the state of the roads, the audit also says we have among the worst roads in the country, certainly poorer than our neighboring states. How important
fourth worst in the country. Some say even third worst, meaning that, you know, there's virtually no state that has worse roads than what Wisconsin does. And we're a very transportation-dependent state because of tourism, because of distribution companies, because of heavy manufacturing. Transportation is vital to our economy. And, you know, the governor just has not been paying attention to this at all. And, in fact, it looks like his transportation department has been misleading us.
So we heard our last guest Craig Thompson, say that kicking the can down the road isn't a great idea, and bonding and borrowing is not going to solve this, and that raising user fees has to be a part of this picture. Do you agree?
Well, almost certainly. I can't imagine any other process than attempting to come up with some other approach to having people that are using the roads pay for their proportionate share.
Yeah, so, but if the governor says, sure, raise the gas tax, for example, but give me a tax cut somewhere else, is that possible?
Well, that's up to the governor to determine whether or not there are savings to be had elsewhere. But, you know, we also have other problems in this state. You know, the cuts have been brought forward to education are beginning to show, take its toll on our educational sector. And, you know, I'm very worried about that as well, because that's another impact on the economy. When you talk to businesses that have moved to Wisconsin historically, many times it's because we've always had a quality educational system. So it will be a real challenge to try and find to cut revenues in other areas where they're also very much needed.
We will move on to some other issues while we have you. Let's talk a little bit about the panel of federal judges on Friday ordering the legislature to redraw the state assembly maps by November 1st so that the new borders are in place by the 2018 election. Those challenging the maps... what is your reaction to the order?
Well, it certainly is a huge victory for the citizens of this state. You know, essentially what they're saying is that they no longer, you know, allow for politicians to choose their voters. Instead, voters should choose who they want to represent them. You know, the plaintiffs in this case, which put forward a very thoughtful case, you know, indicated that we have the most partisan, gerrymandered lines for districts in the entire nation. In fact, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel did an outstanding piece this Sunday where they went through and they analyzed even this last election. And, you know, again, you know, Craig Dilbert did a very thorough job showing how the built-in advantage that Republicans put together. I mean, they essentially drew maps so that they could have a majority and so they couldn't be held accountable for their actions, that they could take all of these extreme actions and still be empowered, because basically, most districts are 60% or close to it. And as a consequence, in the Kenosha-Racine area is the perfect example, where we have very competitive state Senate seats in the Kenosha-Racine area. And as the Racine Journal Times and the Kenosha News said, after the redistricting, people might as well not even vote after the primaries, because you already know who's going to win each seat. One seat's almost like a horseshoe around the two cities of Kenosha-Racine. My district looks somewhat like a Nike swish. But the worst part about it is that essentially, after the primary, you might as well not even vote. And that squashes democracy. It doesn't allow for holding people accountable. And it leads to the kind of extremism that we've seen in the state of Wisconsin.
I'm going to jump in because we have news next from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking with Assembly Minority Leader Peter Barca after the news. This is our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking during this segment of the State Capitol Report with State Representative Peter Barca, who is also the Assembly Minority Leader. We are talking with him about a number of issues facing the state of Wisconsin. We started with this State Department of Transportation audit that found that highway projects in Wisconsin have increased in cost by about $3 billion since they were approved by the state legislature. It was a critical report saying that the state DOT vastly underestimated the cost of highway projects. And it also said that the roads in Wisconsin are in horrible shape. We talked with a guest in our first half about the transportation situation, talked some with Assembly Minority Leader Peter Barco, who says they are in our roads and this whole situation is a crisis. And now we are moving on to some other issues, getting Representative Barca's reaction to a number of other issues, including this this panel of federal judges on Friday telling the state legislature to redraw the legislative maps for the state assembly. The state is expected to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. Representative Barca, does that mean we're just going back to what we have now, or do you have hopes for this in the U.S. Supreme Court?
Certainly I do. You know, the original decision was written by a Ronald Reagan appointee, and a very, very well-reasoned decision, talking about the wasted votes that occur by packing Democrats into a district and not really allowing for fair representation. And it was all written about trying to get Justice Kennedy's vote, because Justice Kennedy has stated that he does not like this type of partisan gerrymandering. And he's been the swing vote traditionally in this U.S. Supreme Court, but he said he wanted a rational basis for making a decision. And the Reagan appointee judge indicated that he felt that it clearly met the Kennedy test. And then this latest decision was unanimous. All three judges ruled that the current maps cannot stand, that we need new maps, and that they must be drawn by November. So we feel like there's a great decision. Clearly, even with this story that appeared in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where it talked about, you know, President Trump barely winning Wisconsin, but Republicans capturing a large percentage of, assembly districts and Senate districts for that matter, is just further indication of just how the partisan gerrymandering that has gone on in this state. And, you know, the citizens deserve a chance to pick their representatives, not the other way around.
Yeah, talk some about why the courts are telling the state to redraw the maps. Redistricting is the duty of the party in power, at least in the state of Wisconsin. Doesn't this always happen? And what's wrong with these maps that perhaps weren't wrong with previous maps?
Well, courts, first of all, there are certain constitutional principles that have to be withheld when drawing maps. And over time, courts, when they have found that legislatures have not adhered to those constitutional principles, they've thrown the maps out. This is not unique. This particular decision does carve out new ground, because it actually comes up with a rational basis to determine when something has been excessively partisan, where it no longer meets the constitutional principles of protecting the interests of all voters in the state to be able to choose their own representatives. And the plaintiffs said that these were, you know, the most heavily skewed to one party of any plan in the country in recent decades. And the judges agreed that, in fact, it is heavily skewed. And they indicated that you're not really allowing people the free opportunity to choose their voters. And, you know, as I had started to point out, in the Kenosha Racine area, it's particularly egregious in the state Senate seats, where for, you know, over 100 years, Kenosha and Racine had essentially their own state senator, and they were very competitive seats. In fact, Racine went back and forth between Democrat and Republican 8 times. And now both seats are over 60% from one party or the other. And so you're really not giving people a chance to select who they want to represent them.
Yeah. Now, those who are challenging the maps wanted the judges to draw the lines, but apparently the panel ordered the legislature to redraw the lines. What's your reaction to that?
Well, plaintiffs felt that, you know, the Republicans have been given an opportunity, and obviously people probably remember that they actually did it in secret. They were actually essentially like secrecy oaths taken, where people actually signed statements they'd withhold it from the public. But the result, of course, was so heavily partisan that they would have preferred that. But I think the judges felt that the timing, and in the past, judges sometimes have redrawn maps, but the timing of this was such that, you know, the court felt that there's plenty of time by this November to have the legislature come back in with a new map that hopefully this time, in fact, will be allow for fair elections and you know, the next election, regular scheduled election, is in November of 2018. So they felt they didn't need to entangle themselves in that, given that the timing was such that there was time allowable for the legislature to try and take one more crack at doing it right. So we're hoping that we do do it right. We'd like to have hearings around the state and listen from to voters all across the state and represent their views and attempt to pull together maps that, in fact, will allow for much more fair representation.
Tom on Facebook says, the court is treating this as though the Republicans made a mistake and it needs to be corrected. Wrong. They were untrustworthy when they gerrymandered the districts that created this mess. How can they be trusted to do it honestly now? Quick react to that.
Well, certainly, I think that there's an argument to be made to that effect. However, you know, presumably this time the courts will hold them accountable. And if they, in fact, come back with a similar map that they have now, I assume at that point the court would, in fact, draw a map.
Yeah. Ed on Facebook says it is time for a nonpartisan group to draw our maps. It should not fall to either party and to create what are typically poorly drawn and inequitable maps. States like Iowa have the right idea. No more guaranteed victories for any candidate. And he goes on, but do you agree? Do we need a nonpartisan group to draw the maps at some point?
Well,
in the future?
Personally, I do agree with that. I do think that we should have a nonpartisan group to draw it. But, you know, Representative Fred Kessler, who has done so much work on this case and really is an expert in this field of redistricting, he also has an idea which would, I think, also add impetus to this argument that's being made. And in his case, he believes we should have a constitutional amendment so that a certain percentage of districts have to be competitive. And so it's an interesting approach. I credit Representative Kessler, but I do support an Iowa-type style commission, because I think that the public is just so terribly served when you have this type of partisan gerrymandering that goes on. And we just cannot allow this to occur, because then the other impact is that's what produces the kind of polarization that you have today. That's where you end up getting extreme ideas that can go through, because one party feels they have a locked-in majority and that the public can't hold them accountable.
In other news, some state Democratic lawmakers are urging Paul Ryan and Congress to keep funding Planned Parenthood. They say that Planned Parenthood has 60,000 patients in Wisconsin, 50,000 of whom qualify for Medicaid. And if the funding is cut, those women will lose their health care. What do you say to Congress about this issue?
Well, there's no question. We've seen in Wisconsin, with actions that have been taken here, and it would only compound the problem on a federal level if they don't allow for programs like Planned Parenthood offers, in many cases in rural areas where there's not any other access to women to the kinds of critical services that are needed. They do breast cancer screenings, cervical cancer screenings, and so many other critical women's health services. And, you know, there's no question that the efforts that have already been made, federal efforts, to take away funding would really hurt accessibility for health, women's health issues in particular, but men also. In many of these rural areas, men and women depend on these critical services that are being offered. It's the only access to health care.
Running short on time, but Governor Walker is expected to unveil his budget in just 9 days. What are you hoping to hear from him when he introduces it to you and your colleagues in early February?
Well, we're hoping that you know, first of all, with this Department of Transportation audit that came out, which is so critical, we hope he takes that to heart. clearly the people of the state have been hurt dramatically by, you know, having the third or fourth worst roads in the entire nation. Additionally, though, we're hoping that you'll put much more emphasis on helping working class people get them back to work. You know, our economic development efforts in the state have not been positive. According to the latest study by Pew Research, we have the most diminished middle class in the entire nation. So we're hoping he doesn't just come up with more plans to give tax breaks to those at the very top when we know it's really middle class people that need tax relief and need much more help in order to be able to support their family and dignity.
That's what you hope for in our final minute. What do you fear?
Well, what I worry is that he'll go down the same path that he has, where he'll starve education, which will mean that, once again, education will be stymied from being able to provide the kind of education and training that has been a hallmark of Wisconsin for generations. And I fear that we won't come up with bold, serious plans to do workforce training to close the skills gap. And I fear that he'll use most money to give tax breaks to those at the very top again, further hurting working class people, where working class people desperately need help at this juncture in the state of Wisconsin. You know, when you have studies like Pew Research's latest study that says that we have the most diminished middle class in the entire nation.
Thanks very much for joining us. Peter Barka, Democratic State Representative from the Kenosha and Racine area. He is also the Assembly Minority Leader. And in the first half of our state capital report, we heard from Craig Thompson, the Executive Director of the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Niaja Ellison for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network.